Cessna pushes back against the BizJet bashers. The Nevada legislature wants to ban home builds. And could an XM bankruptcy leave your screen blank? This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, February 12, 2009. Somebody at Cessna Aircraft Company has decided to push back against the bashing of business aviation by tabloids and pandering politicians. The company, which owes much of its revenue to the Citation line of business jets, announced a new marketing campaign yesterday to address what it calls misinformation on the business use of general aviation aircraft. CEO Jack Pelton announced, quote, "A business aircraft is a tool of industry and one that should see its highest and best use during times of fiscal crisis. Anyone who has ever seen managers board a business aircraft at dawn and return well after dark, having visited multiple cities and attended countless meetings in one day, can attest to the fact that business aviation allows companies to get the most out of every minute of every day, exactly what's needed to work our way toward economic recovery," unquote. Cessna's campaign will begin with ads with pro-business themes, encouraging operators to keep flying business aircraft to demonstrate leadership in the face of economic challenge. Pelton also notes general aviation contributes more than $150 billion a year to the U.S. economy and is one of the few remaining industries that maintains a positive balance of trade, with nearly 40% of the country's total 2007 production exported. The attempt to ban home-built aircraft from North Las Vegas Airport in Nevada is no longer just a local issue. The Nevada State Assembly is considering a resolution calling on Congress to allow the airport to ban all home-builts from flying there. The controversy erupted last year when a Velocity 173RG crashed into a home during testing in the pattern. The pilot and two residents on the ground died. Lost among all the torches and pitchforks is the fact that the pilot appears to already have been violating existing laws. The NTSB's preliminary report indicates the plane was just over 5 hours into its Phase 1 test period and had operating limitations issued that would not have allowed it to linger in the pattern at North Las Vegas. It wasn't too long ago pilots feared the buyout of XM Satellite Radio by Sirius would spell the end of the weather product. As it turned out, the sale was completed in November of 2007 and XM Weather stuck around. But now, several news organizations are speculating on what will happen between now and Tuesday, when the combined Sirius XM has to come up with $175 million it doesn't have to make a debt payment. Advisors are reportedly preparing a bankruptcy filing, possibly to allow dumping Howard Stern's huge contract expense. Others have speculated that Sirius XM wants to force its recent suitor, EchoStar CEO Charles Ergen, to come to terms quickly on a buyout. Satellite radio has about 20 million subscribers, but many don't renew their free one-year subscription that comes with some new cars. The recession has driven down both new car sales and satellite radio renewals. If somebody does end up buying Sirius XM off the courthouse steps for pennies on the dollar, would it make sense to cut aviation weather products, which still have significant growth potential? Probably not, but there's no way to know. Congress is ready to take another run at reauthorizing and funding the FAA through 2012. The Federal Times reports that House Resolution 915 is similar to the House reauthorization bill that passed in 2007, but stalled in the Senate. The FAA has been running on temporary extensions since October 1st of 2007. The new bill does add a whistleblower's office to handle incoming tips directly from both FAA employees and private sector sources. It's a response to the Southwest Airlines case last year, in which FAA employees said their years of reports to supervisors about issues in the airline's maintenance program were ignored and their jobs threatened. The new bill also addresses other criticisms of the FAA, requiring the agency to clarify that its clients are not airlines but passengers, and requiring FAA to notify regulated parties that they do not have any right to choose which FAA employees will conduct inspections. Of special interest to general aviation, the $70 billion proposal would allocate $16.2 billion for the Airport Improvement Program and $1.3 billion for R&D, including hastening implementation of next-gen air traffic control. Before heading into a subcommittee hearing on the bill yesterday, co-sponsor James Oberstar, a Minnesota Democrat, predicted success for the bill this time. Quote, "We have a new president and a new Congress. This time we'll get the job done," unquote. Up next on ANN, there's no pilot like an old pilot. Southwest becomes the latest to test in-flight Wi-Fi. And Alaska sicks the feds on Virgin America. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
We're back for more of your Aero Briefing for February 12th. I'm Paul Plagg. Playing the lead role in the miracle on the Hudson hasn't improved Captain Chesley Sullenberger's U.S. Airways paycheck, but it has given him the proverbial 15 minutes of fame. In an interview with CBS News, he used that platform to argue for retaining older pilots, even if it means paying them better. Of his own experience on January 15th with Flight 1549, Sullenberger said, quote, "One way of looking at this might be that for 42 years, I've been making small, regular deposits in this bank of experience, education, and training. And on January 15th, the balance was sufficient so that I could make a very large withdrawal," unquote. Of the recent pay cuts and longer hours which have followed deregulation, he added, quote, "My decision to remain in this profession that I love has come at a cost to me and my family," unquote. Of the shrinking pool of experienced pilots with military backgrounds, he noted, quote, "I think that there will always be people who want to do this. It just may not be the same people who are doing it now," unquote. The Air Transport Association has had no comment on Sullenberger's remarks. Southwest will become the latest airline to test in-flight wireless internet. Southwest has equipped one 737 with Row 44's internet technology and will equip three more by early next month. Yahoo will create an in-flight homepage with destination-relevant content, including a dedicated flight tracker page. Southwest will be testing the technology for the next few months. Row 44's technology uses satellites to link to the internet, unlike the ground-based systems rolled out recently by several of Southwest's competitors. Southwest Marketing VP Dave Ridley says, quote, "We believe the aircraft-to-satellite technology is the most robust solution in the industry, and we look forward to the feedback from our customers," unquote. Another difference is that Southwest's service will be free. Passengers will need to use their own carry-on computers or internet-enabled mobile devices. The company does not yet have regulatory approval to go fleet-wide with the system. The final report by a Russian board convened to investigate the September 2008 crash of an Aeroflot Nord 737 notes that alcohol was found in the chief pilot's blood, but blames the accident on poor training. Controllers told investigators the pilot appeared to be under stress and was not responding to their instructions just before the aircraft crashed in the Ural Mountains. Weather was poor, and the pilot was making his second landing attempt. Reuters reports an official commission ruled this week the accident was caused by the pilot's loss of orientation, tied to a lack of familiarity with the 737's Western-style attitude indicator. As for the alcohol, Head Commissioner Alexei Morozov told a press conference, quote, "I think that to judge if the crew were drunk or not is more the prerogative of prosecutors than ours," unquote. Aeroflot's mainline operation tried to distance itself from the subsidiary after that crash, but was further embarrassed in December by a pilot whose bloodshot eyes, rubbery legs, and slurred speech panicked passengers aboard a mainline Aeroflot 767 waiting to depart Moscow for New York. Privately held Virgin Airlines made an auspicious debut in 2007 and has been gaining ground against its more established competitors. The airline's load factor was at 81.4% and rising in last year's third quarter, indicating its increasing popularity. Now, the Associated Press reports Alaska Airlines, which goes head-to-head with Virgin America in Seattle, San Francisco, and L.A., is asking the U.S. Department of Transportation to re-examine whether the ownership structure of its new competitor meets the legal requirements for 75% ownership by U.S. stockholders. Alaska says recent media reports bring the matter into question. Keith Loveless, general counsel for Alaska Airlines, says, quote, "Only through a careful and ongoing review of Virgin America's recent actions conducted on the public record can the DOT and public be assured that Virgin will remain a U.S. citizen," unquote. Virgin America was forced to make organizational changes and even purge executives considered too close to Sir Richard Branson before the DOT would issue its operating certificate. The company says nothing has changed since that time and calls Alaska's petition meritless. Quote, "Should our ownership structure change in the future, we will, of course, notify the DOT in advance so they can confirm our continuing compliance," unquote. Still ahead, the father of the F-16 has gone west. New Orleans Lakefront Airport finally gets some attention. And when was the last time you heard the term insourcing? You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, February 12th. I'm Paul Platt. A man who came to be known as the father of the F-16 passed away Sunday at age 89. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram reports Harry J. Hilliker worked as an aeronautical engineer at General Dynamics for 44 years. He started his career with Consolidated Aircraft in San Diego in 1941 and later transferred to the company's plant in North Texas. He had a hand in several post-war aircraft, including the F-111 Aardvark fighter bomber. It was a chance conversation at the Eglin Air Force Base Officers Club in 1962, however, that started Hilliker's work on his most famous creation. U.S. Air Force Major John Boyd unloaded on Hilliker over issues with the F-111. The engineer realized Boyd knew what he was talking about and paid attention. Later on, while assigned to the Pentagon, Hilliker led a team that secretly developed a lightweight fighter smaller than the F-15, with a goal to beat anything the Russians were building. Today, the F-16 is still rolling off the assembly line at a Fort Worth plant that's now operated by Lockheed Martin. Company President Ralph Heath observes, quote, "Harry's legacy is an incredible aircraft that has become the mainstay of 25 nations and continues to be in demand today after 30 years of production," unquote. Hey, Harry, thank you. One of the ugliest remaining reminders of Hurricane Katrina is finally getting some attention. Officials in New Orleans yesterday formally kicked off the restoration of the terminal at New Orleans Lakefront Airport. While some work actually began about a year ago, the New Orleans Times-Picayune reports the formal launch comes on the 75th anniversary of the airport. The original terminal building is among the oldest aviation properties in the country and suffered significant damage in the 2005 hurricane. Among the most exciting aspects of the renovation effort will be the restoration of several original aviation murals and sculptures by Depression-era Work Progress Administration artists. Those artworks, by such notables as Enrique Alfarez and Xavier Gonzalez, were covered up when the airport was renovated in 1964. In addition to restoring the Art Deco terminal building, the project also includes four new hangars to replace those destroyed by Katrina. It was 1985 when the British Airways Concorde supersonic transport made the first of its five visits to Whitman Regional Airport in Oshkosh. The statement made by the display of the aircraft is credited in large measure for elevating EAA Air Venture to its current stature among aviation events worldwide. To celebrate the 40th anniversary of Concorde's first flight in 1969, EAA plans to commemorate the aircraft's unforgettable Oshkosh appearances with a series of special programs and activities at Air Venture this July. The Concorde reunion will involve pilots and co-pilots from the airplane's five visits, cabin crew members, engineers, mechanics, and even attendees who took flights aboard the sleek SST, or who simply witnessed her touching down and taking off on runway 1836. Among the highlights EAA hopes to orchestrate is a reunion photo shoot on Aeroshell Square and a special evening program at Theater in the Woods. More information will be announced as details are confirmed. And finally, who says there's no good news in a recession? What if I told you we have a story here about United Airlines that includes the phrases insource and new hires? Now, before you get too giddy, the news is actually kind of mixed. The Chicago Tribune reports United will insource 165 jobs currently performed in India and Mexico to giant call centers outside Chicago and Honolulu. Some of those people answering your calls on 1-800-UNITED-1 will be existing employees, but others will be new hires. The bad news is they don't want to hear your complaints anymore. You can call them to make reservations, track lost bags, or seek refunds, but if you want to complain or even compliment them on their service, you're going to have to do that by email. The customer service reps will then decide whether to respond by email, snail mail, or telephone. And you know, maybe the news is all good after all. When was the last time you tried to send an email and were told to wait for the next available representative? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. I'm trying my best to find bits of good news to bring you in audio form to help push through these recession blues. Today, we'll hear David Krueger, CEO of the Aircraft Partnership Association, explain his answer to reducing the cost of flying for general aviation pilots. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, or aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.